This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the September 7th edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. Above average investing for the average investor is what we talk about every day, always. As always, your questions are welcome during the hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. Or you can leave your questions on the 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHARTS, always the same. And we'll get to that in a minute. Stocks have rallied sharply, so many people still may be sitting on gains and wondering whether to stay put or cash out, what to do. And it's not an easy choice. How to protect your profits. That's our main talking point today. Let's see if we can shed some light on the fiduciary issue. Anyways, 888-99. Before we go further, let's check our 24-hour listen line calls. It's open for your questions. Anytime you want, you can ask them.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Mike from Washington, and I really enjoy your program. I want to thank you both for the work you do at informing us on many financial matters. Appreciate it. My question today is about bonds. I'm retired and I'm working at developing a bond ladder, and I noticed that there's the coupon and the yield whenever they list a bond for sale, for purchase. And I want to know the correlation between the yield and the coupon, because, for example, on some of them, looking at their A-rated AAA or higher B, the coupon could be like 5%, but the yield might be, depending on how many years out, might be 1 to 2%. What's the correlation between the two? When would it change from a coupon payment, say every 6 months of 5%, to only expecting the yield of 1 to 2%? So if you could explain that to me and why that would change, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. And again, I appreciate the program very much. Thank you.
Yes, I can explain that. When a bond is initially issued, let's say it was initially issued a five-year bond. When any bond is initially issued, it tells you, as it's being issued, what before it's issued, actually, what the coupon rate is, meaning what is the yield at issuance, at par. Remember, par. These all these terms you need to learn. Par means here's a brand new bond. You can buy $10,000, and the coupon rate is 5%. So $10,000, coupon rate is 5%, and par is $10,000, okay? A couple of years go by. Par is still $10,000. The coupon is still 5%. But let's say rates go down to 1.5%. Go down to 1.5%. In general, not this particular bond, but rates in general now have gone down and they're very much lower. So you have a bond in your hand paying 5%, but no one else can get that kind of bond because rates are much lower. So the value of the bond in your hand has gone up from par, $10,000, to maybe $12,000. And if someone wanted to buy it from you, they're not going to get, they're going to have to overpay, right? Overpay for it. And not at par, they're going to have to pay $12,000. Bond still pays 5% on $10,000, but now you sell it for $12,000. That buyer is not going to get 5%, right? He won't, to yield to maturity, he won't, because he had to overpay. He won't get the yield to maturity of 5% anymore. The bond still will pay 5%, but he had to pay up. He had to pay a premium to buy it. So his ultimate value or ultimate yield may be 1.5% to maturity because of him having to pay higher than par for the bond. I hope that's clear. So that's why you can go out after market and buy bonds. And, yeah, they have a coupon rate of 5%. But you're not going to get that if the bond value went up because general interest rates went down. You're not going to get 5% because you overpaid for the bond because it's going to go back to par at maturity. Go back to $10,000. You pay 12 in the middle of the bond period, the five-year bond period. In the middle, you may have to pay over. Now, the opposite is true also. Pay down. You may, if the interest rates rose, they rose, let's say, to 7%. Well, would you pay the par at $10,000 when you can go out and buy a brand new one for 7? Heck no. You'll pay under par to get yield of maturity to 7. They're not as easy as they appear, are they? Sometimes opportunities can come unexpected and from different places and unexpected places. What's driving this one is self-driving cars and the idea that because drivers don't have to be driving, they can be drinking, as in one for the road or maybe two. This comes from NBC today. Morgan Stanley shared its out-of-the-box ideas and analysts on the potential implications of self-driving cars to other consumer industries. Is that really true? That since they're driving the car itself, you can go out and drink in the passenger seat or something? I don't know about that. They were just trying to speculate. Shared autonomous vehicles could expand total addressable market of alcohol beverages while reducing the incidence of traffic fatalities and accidents. This is what they're thinking. You know, pretty far-fetched. To me, it's simpler than that. It's even simpler than that. If you're looking for benefits to self-driving vehicles, how about insurance rates going down? Because there'll be less accidents, period. Regardless of drunk driving or whatever they're trying to develop some convoluted story about, it would just go down because people aren't driving. I think self-driving cars will have less accidents. They might be more spectacular accidents, however, but there'll be less of them. Insurance rates might go down, and maybe auto insurance companies might be having less premiums, thus less profit. So self-driving cars and trucks and all those vehicles may have a pretty big impact on insurance companies, especially auto insurance companies. So those are kinds of things you need to think about. Those are things that you're going to have, you know, self-driving car. Remember that book, Creative Destructions, I mentioned before? This is a perfect example. Got to think outside the box. If there is going to be self-driving cars, what other industries will be affected? And what should you do about it, you know, in your investments? Anything? If you have any questions, give me a call. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. Let's go ahead and go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you.
I wanted to know about this, and I just really mainly just want to understand the difference. There is one company, a corporation, if you will, ticker symbol BBX. And then there is another, which I believe is the same corporation, BBXTB. Is that in fact the same thing, or is one of them publicly traded and one of them not? I just want to really understand the difference between those two.
Okay, BBX is BBX Capital Class A, which means Class A shares. It's a holding company whose principal holding is Blue Green Corporation. So I think BBX, let me try BBX, BBXTB. Let's see if that comes up. No, that does not come up. Okay, it could be, because I can't tell you right off the top of my head because I don't know. But it's not uncommon to have, for instance, BBX is a company that is a holding company, and what it owns or holds is Blue Green Corporation, which might be BBXTB, which is not necessarily a public company, but BBX is a public company. So it's a public company maybe holding a private company. That's possible. I've also seen, and this is pretty common, BBX Capital Company, which is BBX, is Capital Company Class A shares. BBXTB Is that traded on the United States? I'm not pulling it up, showing it traded on the U.S. index.
Believe it or not, it's actually over the counter.
Okay. So it might be the company that this company holds. The other way I've seen it, James, is it could be Class A shares, and then this could be Class B share. Let me try BBX, just T without the B at the end. No. So I have to do some research, but it's common. That's not that common, but it could be two different classes share for the same company. That's possible. But it sounds like if BBXTB is traded on the pink sheets or over the counter, it sounds like then BBX may probably just own that company. It's possible. But
if I may just jump ahead a bit, BBXTB, if one were to invest in that, in a matter of speaking, that would be like one owning shares of a private company?
Yes. It could be. But if it's traded on the
way
pink,
that
it could be. But it's traded on the pink sheets, you said, right?
I believe, yeah, over the counter, yes. That's the way that I understand it.
Okay,
I just wanted to differentiate.
That leads me to believe that it is a public company, but not big enough or strong enough to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. That's kind of, I'd have to do some research. We're all just speculating here. James, sorry I can't answer the question. I had to do some research on that. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and speaking of self-driving cars, is your retirement portfolio on cruise control? The upside of holding steady, hands-off kind of investing is not you'll like make fewer mistakes. You will not. That's not necessarily so. But other factors come into play that could steer you in the right place or run you off the road. So let's talk about it. Self-driving. Or maybe you have a question. 888-99-CHART. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about our main talking point today, locking in gains. And there are, of course, there's two schools of thought about this. How to lock in gains. Should you just get out of the market? Well, does that mean you're trying to time the market? And it's never a good idea to try to time the market. But maybe you can lock in some gains by rebalancing your portfolio because it needs it. Maybe it needs rebalancing. Okay, and that means you could, you know, whatever rebalancing, you have too much money invested in one asset class, just move that to cash and rebalance the portfolio and increase your cash position. Or maybe you're nearing your goals. It's time to move your assets to a safer place. You might want to move that up in the market that we're in today, you know, to move to a little bit safer place, have a better, you know, some kind of hedge or defensive move in play. You know, that's nothing wrong with that. Never, ever is wrong with that. And if you have a bunch of money on the sidelines and you don't want to be a market timer or try to time it, you can do a dollar cost averaging into the market. And if you're a dollar cost averager, you'd basically want the market to go down so you can buy more shares at a lower price over a period of time. So there's different things you have to consider on what you should do. Everybody's different. Every portfolio is different. Every situation is different. It's hard to just go, we'll do this. This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Get in touch. Tell me about your retirement portfolio. What's the mix of stocks, bonds, funds, cash, real estate? What do you have? What do you got? 888-99-CHART, how to reach me directly, 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk. Let's talk to Art Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I was just wondering what your thoughts on Nike. Well, I'd like to come up at some point, but it's been falling for the last probably 2 or 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And, it's down to the low 50s. So I'm thinking I want to pick some up probably right around 49 or 50, somewhere around there.
I think you're going to be able to get it between 51 and 52. I don't know if it's going to go down. I'm looking at a chart, Art. It's hit, the reason why I'm saying this, it hit 51 twice in the last year, or very close, and bounced up. Okay? So there's support right at 51 for the last year, and it's at 52.39. I like Nike. I like Nike in general because it's such a strong, strong brand name company, and it's going to continue. It, you know, it's an $86 billion company. Debt is very low. Sales growth is always 5, 6, 7% per quarter. Very, very steady. Doesn't pay a great dividend. But this is about 51, 52 is where you want to buy it. And it's really close to that number.
Is that even with a pullback? Because I'm trying to just wait for a decent pullback, maybe about 5% or so.
Well, intraday it was at $60 a share, so a 10% pullback would be $6, and that means 54. So it's already pulled down. It's already pulled back.
I meant the market.
Oh, you mean the overall market?
I meant the market.
When the overall market pulls back, most likely Nike will pull down with it. But since it's already pulled down 12%. It's hard for me to see it go down another 10%. It's hard to see that. Yeah, of course it's possible, but I Nike's one of those companies when once you buy it, Art, you just put it in a drawer and ignore it for a long time because they're so good. Yeah. So.
Right around 52, would you buy like half or?
Yeah, if you could do that, you could buy half. And then wait for the market to pull back. But what if it takes 3 more months before it pulls back? You know, no one really knows, right? It's just that it would be a normal for the market to pull back. It's past due now, and it seems like it's normal that it should. And we are in September and October, the 2 months that have the reputation of having the very worst market days, you know.
That's hoping it dropped down right around 50.
It might for you. It might. Hope it works for you, Art. Good luck. I think around 50, 51, 52 is where you want to maybe at least buy half. I think that'd be a good idea. Thank you for the call. Do you have questions about our main talking point today? How to protect your profits? I welcome any of those questions. Some other talking points today that we might get to. Facts about the debt. Facts about debit cards. Not credit cards, debit cards. I think there's some misconceptions going out there, and according to the survey, there obviously are. And what did you listen to or hear what Mario, and I'm going to get the last name wrong because I always do it and I always get emails, Mario Draga, the ECB central banker, what did he say? And there's 4 points that I think you can take away from his statement. And why is the market so sluggish? I mean, it's been very kind of timid, sluggish, I don't know what you want to call it, in the last few weeks, maybe a month or so. Why is that? And I think there's two very clear reasons last month or so. And I just want to make sure we all are on the same page about that. And those are going to be the market commentaries and points that I want to make in today's show. The market itself, the Dow was down 22 points, the NASDAQ up 5, and the S&P down 1, which is pretty much what it did all day long, kind of a nothing day. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is the anytime number.
My name is Jason from San Antonio, and I realize that you don't really recommend airline stocks at all. However, I do work for an airline, Southwest, Simba LUV. We do have an option to purchase stock at a 10% discount, and I wanted to get your take on if that would be a good investment in the shorter term, maybe 4 or 5 years. Love your show. Thanks so much.
I like LUV as far as an airline. I'm not keen on airlines, and you've heard me say that before, but LUV is Southwest Airlines, everybody. Southwest Airlines. And, of course, then there's the other one that I like. That is also a discount. I like the discount airlines. And, you know, it's if you're going to buy an airline, it's going to be either Southwest or JetBlue. One of those two. Now, this has come down pretty hard from 60, almost 64 down to 52. in the last couple of months. Have you noticed a lot of stocks have come down in the last couple of months? Maybe we're seeing sector rotation going on. Anyways, you buy 10% discount as an employee. Yeah, buy it. Yeah, well, when do you ever get that? Now, my very next question to you would be, well, how long do you have to hold on to that with that 10% discount? And if, as a price has already gone down from 64 down to 52, you get a 10% discount. So you're at 52, that's another $5. You're now at $47 a share. I think that's pretty good. So, yeah, I would do it. I know you've got questions. Get our experience. You're welcome. All are welcome. I'm financial advisor Steve Pisa, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues next. First, a word for KPP Financial, and it's all about growth. For the investor who is looking for optimum growth and is not averse to a higher level of risk, this investment program steps up for you. It's called Disciplined Equity, a program from KPP Financial. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing only on high-quality companies. It's more aggressive than our normal stock program. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. To find out more about it, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com or click on Contact Steve, and he'll be glad to fill you in. You can ask any question you'd like. And as with all of our programs, a KPP financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This parallel investing is your assurance of optimum care and diligence. Check it out on InvestTalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now let's get back to Invest Talk. A successful investor keeps an open mind, but relies on the tried and true also. And there's never a day when they don't learn something valuable. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready for your money question right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Crystal in Mountain View. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. What do you think about Seagate? I have the holding right now and have fallen quite a bit since May.
Yeah, I probably hold on to it now. It's already had its fall, I think, because it looks like, for the sense, late July, it has now found a bottom. It looks like this is the bottom that it's, unless something comes out of left field and drives it down further. Seagate's $32.34, symbol STX, manufactures hard disk drives for the enterprise, desktop, mobile computing, and consumer electronics market. And there's a sea change going on in disk drives and hard disk drives. And Seagate's, as well as Western Digital, are on the forefront of that move. So I'm a little concerned that they've been falling. Sales have been falling. But I think that looks like it's now stopped. So I think this is the price. You hold it. You don't sell it from here. You hold it. And it goes back, when it goes back up to about $40, it's going to hit some really tough resistance. And I don't know how long it'll take to get up there, but I do think the company is very solid. A little worried about the debt. They have quite a bit of debt. But it's also, there's a $32 stock going to make about $4 a share. So it's pretty inexpensive at this point. Okay, Crystal?
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. STX was a symbol, everybody. Seagate Technologies. Not my favorite area of the market, but I wouldn't sell it at this point. Let's go to Ray in Saratoga. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing just fine. I had a question with regards to the QQQs. Mm-hmm. I was interested in trying to hedge the position, and I didn't know if it would be a wise idea to use the SQQs or if I should use another type of way to hedge in the next couple of few months
Well, a perfect hedge, of course, would be just to short the same amount of shares you're long. So if you had 100 shares of QQQs, you could sell short 100 shares. If you use the SQQQ, that's an exchange traded fund corresponding to 3 times the inverse. So you don't have to buy very much if you just want to hedge off the Qs. Let's say you have 100 shares of the Qs. You can buy 33 shares of this, and that would pretty much hedge the whole thing if it traded 3 times like it says it does. But a lot of times these leverage funds can't quite make what they say. You know, they can't quite do 3 times over any length of time. But, yeah, you could hedge the QQQs with this SQQQ, and it would be fine. But just know that it's not going to be perfect. Okay?
And is there another way that I was reading up, but I don't have quite enough information, are LEAPS, L-E-A-P-S, LEAPS?
Uh-huh.
Is that a different type of way of hedging?
Yeah. But that's going to take, I wouldn't do it if I was a beginner. I don't think someone who's not really familiar with LEAPS, they're a bit more complex, and they're not really a short. They're not a perfect hedge. So I think I'd stick with the ETS. I think I would. Okay, Ray?
Okay.
Appreciate the
Very
call.
Good. Thank you for your help.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Sometimes people, when the people ask me questions about exotic type of investments, and when I say exotic, I mean anything that's not just bond stocks, you know, or even shorts, which are kind of exotic. But it, you know, if I start getting into them, it just confuses the issue for most people. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, I know a lot of people use debit cards instead of credit cards, and one of the main reasons they do is they feel better about it, that they're not actually going into debt, which is not a bad thing. I think it's a good thing, actually. So, but there are some disadvantages using the debit card. Number one, about, I think, a quarter, 25% or so people think that debit cards impact your credit scores, and it does not. They don't help or hurt credit scores. 66% think debit cards are safer than credit cards, and that's wrong, believe it or not. Why? Well, remember, if you have a debit card, it's more linked directly to your accounts than a credit card. Credit card is not really linked to any of your checking account, savings account, or anything else, but a debit card is. Credit cards, almost all of them have 100% protection against someone stealing it and using it, and you have to pay for anything they know. You don't. Debit cards aren't quite that good, especially if you don't discover someone using your debit card for a while. The longer you don't discover it, the less protection you have. So it's not necessarily a good thing. I've been using credit cards to buy things forever, but I always pay it off every month. And many people may not be able to do that, may not have the discipline. That's why you have a debit card. But just bear in mind that it's probably a tad more risky and a tad more dangerous to use a debit card than a credit card, believe it or not. Believe it or not. 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. I will be in San Jose on the 27th of this month for individual retirement reviews. But so let's say you're not near the Bay Area. You can still take advantage of the service. I and Justin both, you know, can do a Skype. We can do telephone. We can take a look at your account any way you want to. If you want me to look at it, just let me see it. Give me an email. Call me. Whatever you want to do. I can reserve a limited number of hours doing this because I can't do it all day, every day. Just go to investtalk.com, investtalk.com with two T's, investtalk.com, and click on the InvestTalk tab, then portfolio review.
There are all kinds of investment risk: asset-backed risk, credit risk, foreign investment risk, liquidity risk, market risk. Then there's the most important risk, and that's the risk you feel comfortable with. Take our award-winning free risk analysis quiz and learn your risk tolerance. It's there for you anytime on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hey, Justin or Steve. I was wondering what you thought about Disney's stock today. It took a big hit, and I was wondering if you thought it was a good time to pick some up. I bought some about a month ago at 102, and today I think it dropped down to 96. So I was wondering if you think it's a good time to buy some more. If you can help me with this, it'd be much appreciated. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, you know, the fall today was all about, you know, Iger, the CEO, having the forecast that wasn't as robust as the experts wanted. Disney, D-I-S is the symbol, Walt Disney Company. And I do think this is this might set up for a good buying opportunity. It went from like $101, $102 down to $97 today. Okay, well, you know, 5%-ish, 4%+. I would not buy it tomorrow. I'd wait till it settles down. I don't know how far down is, but I have a feeling that this is a buying opportunity. It's not a selling opportunity. Disney is one of those companies long-term will go up. If you're looking for an opportunity, remember it was selling for about $115 a share back in April. So it's down 18-19%. So this is that downtime that you really want to buy Disney. And it was down, you know, hard today because of the outlook. But remember, that's all in the news. That's out there now. We know. Okay, we know. So some people will say, well, no, the ESPN brand is suffering, or, you know, look, it's Disney. Over the years, Disney's done nothing but make money. And I don't think it's going to stop. Now, the PE right now is 18 right now, with a five-year range of 15 to 24, and the earnings are going to go up 10% next year. So I kind of like it in these prices. I wait for it to calm down. See if it holds, where it holds. I thought it was going to hold about 102, but obviously it didn't. So I do think it's a good time to be picking up Disney and looking at it. I do. So you might want to wait a little bit. That's all. Okay, the ECB had Mario, I know the name I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Draghi, who is the, you know, the Fed chairman of the ECB, not the Fed chairman, the chairman, the head banker for the European Central Bank, had a news conference. And there's 4 points. Remember, it's EU that he is in charge of. He's the one that has the massive QE still in place there. Still in place, QE, quantitative easing, like we had a couple, 3 years ago for many years, and we stopped it 2 years ago and started, you know, starting to tighten the money a little bit. Four things you can take away from his little statement. First, that the ECB is not too happy about the super low inflation they have. Now, our Federal Reserve is not happy about our low inflation. There's no inflation pressures, which they're kind of stumped about. Not only Europe, but also here, the Federal Reserve Chairman here in the United States. Mario also does not like the volatility in the exchange rates. The dollar has been going down. The euro has been going up in value. Everybody kind of wants a strong currency. But at the same time, they know that hurts exports, and everybody in the world was trying to lower their currencies against other currencies to try to spur the economy, which didn't really work very good. But he says he doesn't like the volatility, but maybe he likes a little stronger euro. Maybe he does. Third, he raised the forecast GDP for the EU for 2017 from 1.9% growth to 2.2%. That was interesting. And he also said he's going to keep the interest rate at zero because there's no inflation. In other words, he's still much more accommodating than our Federal Reserve at this point. And those were the takeaways from what he said. We love your questions. We try to get to them as soon as possible. You can call in between programs if you like and get your question in at 888-99-CHART.
Steve or Justin, this is Sayed from Illinois. I love your show. And I have a question about Anthera Pharmaceutical. That is ANTH. They're pretty much down like 93% in this year. They're trading at $1.50. What do you think? Is time to get in, buy this? I just need your thoughts. I'll be listening to you in your next podcast. Thank you.
Okay. Did he say AMPH as in Henry? Okay, that name is Amphastar Pharmaceuticals. AMPHASTEAR. I don't think that's what he said, the name, though. And it develops injectable and inhalation products to treat diabetes, asthma, anticoagulants, other kind, Alzheimer's. It is a very small company, $717 million microcap. It's going to make 27 cents this year after making 48 cents last year. And it's going to rebound to 67 cents next year. Okay, well, it's a $15 stock, going to make 67 cents. So you know it's, 22 PE, 23 PE. And the five-year range is 22 to 626. So it's a huge range. Return on equity is not very good at 7%. I see no reason to buy this stock because sales growth has been falling the last 3 quarters, shrinking, not just growth shrinking. The growth is not there. The sales are shrinking. And until they turn that around, I would not even consider buying this stock. It just doesn't have debt, which is good, but it just doesn't have the horsepower. I like that management owns 31%. But at this point, it fell from $18.50 down to $14.50 and bounced up to about $16. Now it's at $15.50. So until I see a catalyst, I would not consider buying this stock. There's no catalyst to consider buying this stock. AMPH. Time for InvestTalk 101. How do you assess the risks associated with investing internationally? We're talking about ADRs, American Depository Receipts, ADRs. And they're a pretty important tool for international investors. And before you can assess the risk, you have to recognize the type of risk. First, there's political risk for ADRs. Remember, ADRs are foreign companies selling on our exchanges. To become an ADR, to be sold on our exchange, one of our banks have to sponsor them. They have to own a bazillion of their shares and then trade it on the exchange. Okay, and of course, they have to comply with our general accounting principles. Well, first, you got the political risk, right? Political risk of buying ADRs. What if that foreign country, what if the government decides they want to take over the company? Or tax it out of existence, or this has happened many times over history. You got the exchange rate risks. The currencies are different and rise and fall against each other. Different inflation risks. Inflation can be higher or lower than ours there. So those are just some of the risks that you have to consider. That's InvestTalk 101, everybody. Listen to InvestTalk. Maybe you like some of the talking. You doing it. It's an open forum, everybody. Any money topic is welcome. We can talk together if you like. Today, 888-99-CHART. Okay. Why do you think the market's been so sluggish in the last few weeks, months, 2 months? I mean, if you take a look at a chart of, you know, the S&P 500, for instance, you'll see that it just hasn't done anything but move sideways. And we might be trapped now in a sideways market. And we can go all the way back to the end of July, and that's what we're seeing, a sideways moving market. And I can probably point at two major things going on in the news, and maybe even three. First, Trump, let's talk about three. Trump didn't get anything done on his health care. That was a big thing that was going to be, you know, that he was going to repeal. Never got it done. And that was the only thing they really even worked on, okay, until they took a vacation of August. And then, you know, during the last couple of months, you have this saber rattling of North Korea, flying off missiles across Japan, out, you know, into the Pacific, you know, you name it. There, now they tested a nuclear bomb this week. And then you add a third thing, and that is the hurricanes, you know, the more recent. The market just doesn't feel very comfortable. And that is after a very strong move in the market that still has to be digested by earnings being increasing. The market is not cheap. It's not cheap. In some ways, it's extremely expensive. In no way can you find any reason to say it's undervalued. I don't think anybody can say that. It's just not true. And I dare anybody to try to point to any statistic, any fundamentals, anything to try to convince me that the market's undervalued. It's overvalued. Now, you can argue how much. And so, therefore, you have we're in the summertime. Summertimes are usually not the greatest. You got all those things working against it. So I don't think anybody should be too surprised about the lack of movement of the market. It just is what it is. This is a good time to, you know, take a look at your portfolio, decide what you really want to do. And for your long-term investors, if your portfolio is where you want it to be, you don't need to worry about it. Just go on about your business. Let's go ahead and try to answer one more question before the end of the hour. 888-99-CHART is our 24-hour number.
Hey, guys. This is Glenn from PA. I was hoping you could help me out and take a look at Nucor, symbol NUE, about down 10-15%, I believe 10%. And just wondering what you think about it moving forward. I should hold on, buy more on the way down. Any help would be appreciated. Thank you.
Nucor manufactures steel and steel products for the automotive, construction, machinery, and appliance industries. And it's going to be the old line industries are going to trade at lower PE ratios. So never get too excited about low PE ratios in these kinds of old line manufacturing companies. One of the reasons is they have trouble growing. Now, Nucor is actually growing pretty nicely. Sales are up 20% last quarter and most recent quarter, and the quarter before that up 30%. So they really have done well. Of course, there's a lot of competition coming from overseas, and I'll mention China. But, you know, maybe that's going to stop. They're going to make $4.15 this year share to $4.73 next year, and that's a 50% increase this year. It's a $54 stock, going to earn about $4.73, so it tells you the PE is what, 11, 12? And that's higher than the five-year range of 14 to 36. But steel companies generally do trade below 10. This one, this particular one, which is a $17 billion company, is growing much faster, so it deserves a little bit higher PE, and it does have a little bit higher PE. On the chart, this looks like a near where it wants to bottom out. Right around $53 a share, and it's at $54.26. We'll see. Time's up for the hour. A reminder, no matter where you live in the U.S., you can avail yourself of a free retirement account analysis. Also, if you live in San Jose area, again, I'll be there on the September 27th. I was just there, and I'll be there again, September 27th. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thanks for being with us. Join us for Invest Talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.